I'm Carrie Thompson, and you're listening to First File, a special edition of Playback that explores the concept of starting out, of filing your first radio story, which for NPR's Noah Adams meant doing the unthinkable.
Nobody that I know of in radio likes their own voice. They just don't. They do not want to hear themselves. Turn the volume down.
Kind of a liability for someone who sits in front of a microphone for a living. But Noah soldiered on, and 35 years later, his voice has become the embodiment of the sound of public radio. This is Noah's story of starting out at a small public radio station in Kentucky and making his way to NPR, eventually hosting the flagship news program All Things Considered, and all the while, never quite losing that feeling about hearing his voice.
I've left this building many times here at 635 Massachusetts Avenue in Washington and gotten in a cab after All Things Considered, and the cab driver's listening to the program. And I will say, will you please turn? Because I know what's coming up. It's me. I don't want to hear me.
Oh, but we do. NPR's Maureen Clements had the distinct privilege of chatting with Noah recently and finding out about his first file, a story he did in June 1975 about the McLean family band. Mo noticed that Noah piped up only once or twice during the entire four-minute interview. So she asked him, what was up with that?
This was my first piece, right? So I wanted to get out of there as much as I possibly could. So I didn't, couldn't stand it. So that's the reason. That's the reason that I'm not there. I've seen it just happen with everybody. You know, I've never seen a piece come in here that had too much, a beginning piece, that had too much stuff from the beginner. You know, it's always too little.
Yeah.
It's always too little.
When we first started conceiving this piece with you, I couldn't find the piece. I was looking in our catalog records, and it wasn't there. And then I emailed you, and you said it was a piece on the McLean family band. So when I did a search on the McLean family band, it came up with the byline as Don Adams.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, well, maybe there was some sort of
misprint. I should have warned you about that.
After their tour, they stopped by public station WBKY in Lexington, Kentucky, and told Don Adams about making friends for the United States.
My full name, and I have my Social Security card with me, is Noah Donald Adams. And I was working as a tape editor and writer, a production assistant for All Things Considered. Didn't plan to be on the air. Had done some air work, of course, at a member station. And I was hired as Don Adams. There at that time, there was a comedian, Don Adams. He was in the TV series Get Smart, right? And the weekend program came along. And I heard the audition tapes of the people they were thinking about hiring as the male part of that. And I went into the producer's office and said, you know, I've been listening through the hallway there, and who do you like best? And he played the one person. And I said, well, I don't particularly want to be on the air, but I'm better than that guy. I just didn't like him at all. So in sort of self-defense for the program, I got the job. And the director of programming here at that time said, quite sensibly, he said, do you mind using your first name? Because there is this other guy, and why confuse things? So, and I liked Noah and never have any trouble answering to it. And Jack Mitchell was the one who suggested that,
mm-hmm.
right? He
mm-hmm.
said, why don't you do that? And I said, okay.
Now, in the very first piece that you did in First File, the piece is about the McLean family band.
Mm-hmm. I knew the McLean family. I had an interest in bluegrass music, and I knew the McLean family band from their performances. And this was a very exuberant band. And it was the dad, Raymond Sr., wanted his kids to play so he could hold them together, you know, and they would go travel. It was just sort of a great idea, and they were fun. They were fun to watch.
The Sounds of Bluegrass, performed by the McLean family. Raymond McLean teaches Appalachian and bluegrass music at Berea College in Kentucky, and he's always been musically inclined. One day several years ago, he and his three children decided to turn their front porch picking into something more ambitious, enter the McLean family band, then exit the McLeans for a four-month concert tour of Europe. After their tour, they stopped by public station WBKY in Lexington, Kentucky, and told Don Adams about making friends for the United States.
in addition, or perhaps instead of making friends for the United States, that we were really finding friends that were already there. Perhaps they weren't friends of bluegrass music beforehand, but music's a great vehicle for finding friends, and particularly bluegrass music, because it's so direct. There are quite a few bluegrass bands in Sweden, we all know, and in Japan, we know, and the Netherlands and England.
France. Austria.
But
there
are also quite a few bluegrass bands in Czechoslovakia. They explained it there by the fact that they had a tradition of tramp music. I don't know whether that's an accurate translation or not, but they explained that somewhat similar to our hobo songs and so forth. There was a tradition of country music that was somewhat like that in the United States. And for that reason, bluegrass music was very appealing to musicians in Czechoslovakia.
You said that your most enthusiastic response came in Japan. Why do you suppose that bluegrass is so well liked there?
I think that bluegrass music is popular.
I say, see how good he is and how bad I was? You know, that's the whole thing you got to learn about radio, right? You know, he's just talking. And I'm going, why do you think that? I'm reading the question probably, which you should never do. And that's why I don't listen to that story very
much. You know, it also got me to thinking, too, when I listened to the piece, it made me wonder, you know, Ray McLean's voice has got such a wonderful accent.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so Appalachia.
Right.
And also, another interesting thing that we're going to hopefully play you a clip, Bob Edwards, when he's introducing the piece, he even slips into a Kentucky accent.
Mm, really.
One day several years ago, he and his three children decided to turn their front porch picking into something more ambitious.
That's interesting. Yeah, he's dropping the G's there at the end.
Yeah.
I had a Kentucky accent when I started in radio, an Appalachian accent. As a matter of fact, I didn't get the first job in commercial radio that I auditioned for. I went to a place and read some commercial copy. And the guy came out, the manager, and he said, you know, you're never going to work in radio because your accent's too strong. I said, what are you talking about? You all sound like this. And he said, no, yours is too strong. And I went back home and I tried to think about it a little bit and realized that the Appalachian accent really exist in what Bob did there, dropping the G, and that happens all over. That's a kind of a country thing, any rural thing. But the Appalachian accent is only two vowels. It's O's and I's, pronounced like A's. Like you would say, my dad's name is Howard, and he gets up every morning and takes a shower, and then he goes to work at the far station, pronouncing that I like an A, which I've said on the air. Washer and dryer. And the rest of it is just tiny little regional things, you know, which I would never want to lose. But later on at the University of Kentucky, students would come to me and say, I understand that you're from Kentucky. We want to lose our accent. And I would say, no, I don't want you to. You want to be in broadcasting, keep it.
Now, you had said that you were working at a member station before, that you had experience before. You became a host at what we kind of consider WOTC, mm-hmm. Weekend All Things Considered.
WBKY, University of Kentucky in Lexington, Kentucky. It'd been around for a long, long time. I was living in Lexington, and I was at that point doing construction work. And public radio came along in 71. And so about 73, I started hearing it and listening to it and thinking, well, I really like this. You know, this is conversational. It's honest. It's intelligent. And I think I could do that. And then I got a full-time job at the station as chief announcer. I worked there during the day and was on the, as we would say, on the board, playing classical music at the control board. And then at 5 o'clock, All Things Considered would come on the air. Ding, 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 ding.
From National Public Radio in Washington, All Things Considered.
And I would sit there and listen very carefully. And you wouldn't have anything to do because there were no real breaks in it except every half hour. And 5 o'clock to 6:30. And then I would go home. And I thought, well, you know, Washington, I like that. National Public Radio. I should see if I could go to Washington. But then a job opened up, came down the little teletype machine, job opening at All Things Considered. And in the meantime, I had sort of stepped into the, very gently, into the water, the pool, the ocean of news. Because there was an environmental issue going on there, I was doing a lot of backpacking and camping in a place called the Red River Gorge up in eastern Kentucky. And the Corps of Engineers wanted to build a dam. They were building these dams all over Kentucky. And they said they were flood control dams. So they really weren't. And we already had plenty of, you know, motorboat lakes. We didn't need anything. And the gorge was just transcendent. It really is. It still is. And I got so offended by it. I said, I'll do a documentary.
Wherever you've got progress, somebody's going to get hurt. There's people that fought the Mountain Parkway into eastern Kentucky. Toth and Toonail. There's some of these old people back up there in Wolf County. They won't even drive on it.
A lot of people have been led to believe that all the people in Stanton and Clay City favor this dam. This is not true. It's just a few people who have expectations of economic gains from floodplain development that want this dam.
In Kentucky, people...
And that was my first real foray into news. And I wrote a letter of application for this job at All Things Considered, tape editor, writer. And the producer of the program called me up, and we had a long talk, a couple hours. There was never a question of my coming to Washington for an interview. And the producer hired me. He said, okay, you got the job. And he told me later that he wanted some. I was a little bit older. He said, I wanted somebody older. I wanted somebody who knew who Solzhenitsyn was. He said, I got these kids, you know, I think the average age was in their early 20s back then. And, well, I knew that Solzhenitsyn was a Soviet dissident, but I'd never read him. But that's why he hired me, sight unseen, and I came and I worked. And that's what happened. And I'd filed that one story. That one story about the McLean family band was the only evidence that they had that I could, you know, do anything. And I couldn't hardly do anything. I couldn't edit tape. Not the kind of tape editing that you have to do here.
Now that we're visiting some of the pieces that you did, one of the things that we know that you're working on the chapter for the 40th anniversary book on the 70s. What's that been like, revisiting the 70s all over again? Like, we've only asked you to revisit one piece here, but now you have to write a whole chapter on that. Has that been difficult?
I didn't mention this piece in that chapter. I didn't say anything about it. I found it very frustrating to try to tell what happened to this place, to the people who came to work in Washington, and what it was like to be here, because it seems so trivial compared to what it was. And I came in 75, and the chapter ends with the beginning of Morning Edition, which was in November of 79, at the same time that the NPR satellite system started. And that was a big thing, because all of a sudden we went from a really thin little telephone line to this big several channel stereo, beautiful system that somebody, you know, that people, we could probably find out their names, had the foresight to start planning for 6 or 7 years before that.
Public Radio is bringing you Through Satellite, a new era of radio broadcasting for the sake of sound.
15 kilohertz,
6 gigahertz,
wideband,
highband,
down converter,
power divider,
transponder,
synchronous orbit,
uplink,
downlink,
milliwatt,
footprint,
high gain antenna,
low noise amplifier,
stereo configuration,
orthogonal polarization,
microwave,
Westar satellite.
Satellite?
Satellite.
And so that was a great thing. But nobody knew what public radio was going to be. If you would have said in the 80s and 90s that public radio stations would be the number one news source in a community like Boston, you would have laughed, because they had powerhouse radio stations back then. It's not so much that NPR provided an alternative, because NPR started as an alternative and grew into a very substantial source of news. And I think kept its alternative values along the way. But it's not that we created an alternative and that won the day. It's that the other people gave up, you know? They just gave up. Out of greed, they became something else. So on the radio, if you want some halfway decent news and conversation, it's National Public Radio. And that's at the end of that chapter, that's where that it becomes apparent that that's what's going to happen, you know, that barring collapse, and that could have happened in the next chapter, in the 80s, when NPR had a very severe financial, it just sort of fell into a quagmire of debt and trouble, and could have gone away. But at that point, I think I say in somebody else's book, I don't care if NPR goes away. This is in the 80s. If it shuts down, there will be another news service. What we have that's so important are the member stations that are now growing up and becoming viable and understand what their role is in the community. And as Vivian Schiller, the president of NPR, now says, I was just at WFIT in Melbourne, Florida, 35 years on the air. And I told the audience there, Vivian Schiller says, the New York Times doesn't have WFIT in Melbourne, Florida. I haven't got anybody there, right? And we have, a radio station that's been on 35 years that cares about what's happening at the network and cares about what's happening in the country. And I could see that back then. The first program was May 3rd, 1971, and it happened to be an anti-war demonstration day in Washington, D.C., and 7,000 people were arrested, and there was tear gas, and there was all sorts of things going on. What a day! And the coverage was great. It really was. We had people out on the streets. We also ran a story that you can just imagine had been up on somebody's whiteboard or chalkboard for months as it came up to the first day. And that story was about a barber in Iowa who was making extra money by shaving women's legs.
And shaves are not too common in barbershops. How long has it been since you've given a man a shave, Al?
Oh, about 3 weeks.
You say you haven't given a man a shave for some 3 weeks, and yet I see you getting all the lather out and the hot towels. What's going on here?
I'm shaving a girl's leg.
This is the sort of thing that might cause a rush to barbering schools, don't you think?
Definitely.
Do you find any unusual problems in shaving a leg as opposed to shaving a gentleman's face?
There's no problems at all.
I didn't mean aesthetically. I meant any sort of physical problems involved. Well, I want to rephrase that, too.
That was
is it
the
easy?
Deal. So I could just see it, you know. It was up there, and they're going to run it. And so, because it maybe didn't have something else to do, you know. And Morning Edition went on the air in 79, the day after the hostage taking in Iran. And there wasn't anything on the program. There was something in the newscast, but there wasn't anything on the program because they couldn't figure out how to, if it was important or how it could be important or how they could do it, you know. And so there's where the decade ends, and it really is kind of a turning point, I think.
Good morning. Today is Guy Fawkes Day. Guy's plot to blow up Parliament was discovered on this day in 1605. Today is the beginning of National Split Pea Soup Week, and it's the debut of this program. I'm Bob Edwards.
I'm Barbara Hochter. Today is Monday, November 5th. This is NPR's Morning Edition.
I have had the opportunity to do quite a few things here and to travel quite a lot, and I was on the air during that 9/11, and wonderful things have happened to me, just wonderful moments. I was able to spend a lot of 3 years' time working in Mississippi and New Orleans after Katrina, and I did a year of stories about low-wage workers, which I'm very proud of. There's been nothing that matches that adrenaline thrill of hearing your story come back down that line that you've done and hearing yourself. Nothing the first time. In that case, it was my only time that ever happened. Nothing matches that. Nothing. And I knew it. I thought, that's a feeling that's not going to come back. You know, there it is. And somehow it was validating for me. It was validating for our radio station, for the McLean Family Band, for Eastern Kentucky. I don't know. It was just fun. And I did it. And it wouldn't have happened if I hadn't done it. And somehow I got a story on the network, you know. I'm just this guy down there in Kentucky fooling around with radio. And I knew it. I just knew that feeling wouldn't come back.
Well, we get to relive that feeling here in this special first file edition of Playback. That was NPR's Noah Adams, a man who also goes by the name of Don. Interviewed by Maureen Clements, Argail Moe, appearing here in a first file of her own. Thanks for listening. Next month, we're back with a holiday hijinks edition of Playback, with a step-by-step guide on the best way to open a bottle of champagne. and official predictions for 1985. I'm Carrie Thompson, and you're listening to Playback.